SWAT cars. General Motors and their dealer organization throughout Southern Africa proudly bring you the drama, the danger, the thrills, and the facts when the long arm of the law travels in squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Thursday, December the 5th, 4:50 a.m. Dawn hasn't yet begun to color the blackness of the early morning Durban sky. In the moistness of the air, street lamps are blurred islands of yellow. A solitary car cruises slowly down West Street, its headlights misted pools like the drowsy eyes of a yawning drunk. The car stops for a street traffic light, which flashes out an officious command of red to an otherwise empty street. In the car are Detective Sergeant Michael Vincent and Constable Adrian Bester. The night for them has been routine. A brawl at a beachfront nightclub, a burglar alarm in a city departmental store triggered by an incautious cat, a prowler reported for the 12th time in as many weeks by a lonely old woman to whom the investigating policemen are welcome company. The traffic light cools to green, and the car moves on, heading towards the West Street groin.
Another wild night, eh, Constable?
Suits me, Sergeant. I'm a peace-loving thug.
Then you're in the right job. Nothing dangerous ever happens on the force, you know that.
Yeah, that's why I joined the force, Sergeant. Yes, for the peace of it. And I've got the scars to prove it.
It'd be a funny kind of cop if you didn't have a scar or two.
Where to now? Snell Parade or Addington?
Oh, let's see if there's anything down Addington way. We cruise back along Point Road.
Right, Sergeant.
Hold it. Slow down.
Hey, what's that?
Somebody lying in the gutter over there. Could be a drunk. Could be something worse. Let's take a look.
He hasn't budged. Looks like he's out cold.
Face down, one arm flung over his head. Can't see much. Well, let's have a look now. Come on. Down over.
Oh, somebody didn't like his face very much.
Yeah, he's no drunk. Whew. Assault victim. Whoever did it certainly put the boot in.
Detective Sergeant Vincent goes through the man's pockets while he waits for an ambulance to arrive. The assault victim carries papers identifying him as Brian Jessup, a journalist on the Durban Morning newspaper. He also carries a small pocket diary. Next to December the 5th is a cryptic entry, Benji Dacha. Sergeant Vincent's eyebrows flicker briefly. Then he returns the papers and diary to the unconscious reporter's pockets. The ambulance arrives, and the policemen follow it to Addington Hospital.
We put 8 stitches in that gash in his forehead and 5 in the cheek. Looks like a ring could have ripped it open. He's got 2 or 3 cracked ribs. I can't be more definite than that until I've had a look at the x-rays. Oh, and probably concussion, of course.
Those injuries are consistent with an assault, Doctor.
Well, he wasn't hit by a train, Sergeant. Not right in the middle of West Street.
It could have been a car accident.
No, I was just being facetious. It's been a long night. I'm sorry. Yes, definitely an assault. No two ways about it. And from the looks of it, probably more than one man was responsible for it.
Is he still unconscious? Can we talk to him?
No, he's right out. I've given him a pretty strong sedative. He'll sleep for hours yet. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't like to have his head when he wakes up.
One other thing, Doctor. Could he have been smoking Dacha?
Dacha? No, I shouldn't think it likely. I know the smell of it rather well. We get enough people brought in here who have been smoking the stuff, and it seems to cling to their clothes and comes out of their pores. I didn't smell anything like that in him.
No, neither did I.
Any particular reason for asking?
No, nothing special, just an idea I had.
Oh, come to think of it, I can be more definite than that. He certainly wasn't under the influence of Dacha, or any other narcotic for that matter.
How do you know?
When I examined him, I naturally looked at his eyes. The pupils were normal, neither dilated nor contracted. If he had been on Dacha, there'd have been little pinpoints, Sergeant, and probably bloodshot. His weren't. So whatever your idea was, forget it.
Later that morning, Detective Sergeant Vincent calls at the newspaper that employs Brian Jessup. He's directed to the floor housing the editorial section and makes his way to an office at the end of a long corridor.
Come in.
Oh, good morning. Can I help you?
I hope so, miss. I'm Detective Sergeant Vincent. Yes? I'd like to see your news editor, please.
Oh, well, Mr. Hannon's very busy at the moment, Sergeant. Is there anything I can do? I'm his secretary.
This is official business, miss, about your Mr. Jessup.
Oh, I see. Just one moment, please.
Thank you.
Mr. Hannon, there's a policeman here to see you about Brian Jessup. Yes, that's right. It's a Detective Sergeant Vincent. Yes, of course, right away, sir. Would you come through, please, sir?
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Detective Sergeant Vincent, Mr. Hannon.
Ah, please come in, Sergeant.
Thank you.
That will be all, thanks, Miss Jamison.
Oh, very good, sir.
Please sit down, Sergeant.
Thanks.
My secretary said this was in connection with young Brian. Is that right?
Brian Jessup, yes, that's right, sir. How young is he?
Oh, just a lad, 19 or 20. He's one of our cadet reporters, but he won't be a cadet for long. Bright boy. Perhaps you read our expose story on the Dacher business in yesterday's edition. He wrote that.
I see. That makes things a bit clearer.
Well, he's written a whole series on the subject. We were going to run them once a week.
We're going to?
Yes, the editor's put a stop to that. He says if it means putting our reporters in danger, he won't print the stories. In a way, he's right, of course, but it seems a pity as far as the lad's concerned. He's put a lot of work into the series.
I'm afraid you're going a bit too fast for me, sir. You think there's some connection between the story and the assault.
Why, I thought you knew about it.
Perhaps you'd be good enough to tell me, sir.
Brian was on the night shift last night. He received a phone call from one of his contacts asking Brian to meet him after work. That meant somewhere around 2 a.m, you see. Well, Brian agreed to meet him at the post office. He told the night news editor about it, and off he went. The next thing we know is our hospital reporter calling in to say that Brian was laid up in Addington, the victim of an assault. It doesn't take a great deal of brain work to put 2 and 2 together, does it, Sergeant?
Do you know who this contact of his was?
No, I'm afraid not. You'll have to ask Brian that.
We shall do, as soon as he's in fit enough condition to talk to us.
Not that I think he'll tell you, Sergeant.
Why not?
Well, a journalist has a duty to his source of information. If he discloses the identity of the source, he betrays a confidence. Now, if that sort of thing went on, he wouldn't have any sources left after a while.
That's looking at it from your point of view, Mr. Hannon. As far as we're concerned, a man's been assaulted and we have to find out who did it. If your Mr. Jessup withholds information, he won't be helping us very much.
Yeah, the devil in the deep blue sea, eh?
How's that, sir?
Well, Brian will be caught between the two. To stick to the unwritten code and not tell you, or tell you and help catch the people who beat him up. It's a decision I'm glad I don't have to make.
That afternoon, Detective Sergeant Vincent receives a call from Addington Hospital. The young journalist is conscious and able to talk.
I talked to your news editor this morning, Mr. Hannon. He said you might be reluctant to give me information.
What kind of information, Sergeant?
About your contact. He told me about the phone call and your meeting with this man after work. Would you care to tell me about it, Mr. Jessup?
No. I'll tell you everything I can, but I'm afraid it's not going to help you very much.
Why don't you leave that for me to decide? Go ahead.
Well, I've written a series on Dacher smoking and selling in Durban, you see?
Yes, I know about it. Judging from your first story in yesterday's paper, you know what you're talking about.
Well, I've put a lot of work into it. People have been telling me things that they mightn't tell a policeman, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I've checked on everything I've written. I know it's all true. This Dacher business is much bigger than I'd ever imagined it to be.
You're telling me we know how big it is.
Anyway, one of my contacts has been a man called, well, Benji's enough.
And that phone call was from him?
No, it wasn't. Somebody I never heard before. He said He said he had a message from Benji and he wanted to meet me in private. He left the time and the place up to me, so I thought it would be all right. That's why I chose the post office. It's pretty public at that time of the morning.
And you kept the appointment?
Yeah, I did. I was there on time. I couldn't see anyone else around. I went up the steps and looked around the pillars. I thought it might be keeping out of sight, you see.
Yes.
There was no one there. Then I heard a car pulling up, right up in front of the post office. As I walked down towards it, a man got out of the driver's seat and walked towards me. I think it was an Indian. I can't be sure.
Why not?
Well, he was sneezing, you see, holding a handkerchief to his face.
I see.
What I could see of his skin was brown enough, but it might just have been suntan. Anyway, he opened the front door for me, on the passenger side, of course, and then he walked round the front of the car towards the driver's door. I leaned across to open it for him, and as I did so, I heard a sort of rustling movement from behind the front seat. I half turned towards it, but I wasn't fast enough. Something hit me across the back of my neck, and that was that. My head seemed just to sort of explode. And then I woke up in here. That's all, Sergeant. You see what I mean? None of it's very helpful, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. So somebody was crouched down in the back, behind the front seat. And when you got in, he knocked you out, is that it?
That's right.
You think the driver might have been an Indian?
Yeah, but like I said, I can't be definite.
Hmm. Right, the man who hit you, did you catch a glimpse of him?
No, nothing at all.
Hmm. Now, what about the car? Can you describe it for me?
Yes. It was very big and flashy. Late model Brentwood sedan. Two-tone. Dark blue and white. Lot of chrome.
Mm-hmm. Brentwood sedan, two-tone. Lots of chrome. Registration?
I couldn't see the number plate. You see, the car was parked broadside on as I came down the steps. There was a mascot thing dangling down from the rearview mirror. I think it was a sort of little red devil.
Mm-hmm. Now, this man with a handkerchief, did he say anything to you?
He just said, hop in. We can talk in the car. That's all he said.
I see. Anything special about his voice? Indian accent?
I couldn't tell, Sergeant. It was muffled by the handkerchief.
I see. So you wouldn't be able to identify him?
I'm afraid not.
Well, we've had cases that start out a lot tougher than this one, and we've cracked them. Let us hope that we'll be as lucky with yours.
Take a holiday in your Chevrolet. South Africa is asking you to call. Drive a Chevrolet, the car that stops today, through the land we love by far the best of all. On the open road or where the traffic's heavy, performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So why not take a ride, see the countryside, see it in your Chevrolet.
1970 Chevrolet. It's your most powerful reason for going automatic. Bigger big sixes. Vivid new V8 power. Consider yourself spoiled by new power on the grand scale. Consider yourself promoted to executive suite luxury. Chevrolet Constantia and Commando for 1970. Consider yourself. Chevrolet does.
So why not take a ride? See the countryside. See it in your Chevrolet.
Monday, December the 9th. 4 days have gone by since the vicious assault on the young reporter. 4 frustrating days for Detective Sergeant Vincent and members of his squad investigating the assault. They've checked on known members of the various Dacha peddling rings in Durban. They've cross-checked on motor cars belonging to these members. But the distinctive blue and white Brentwood sedan hasn't come to light. They've tapped their minds of informers without success. Even in the underworld, no one is talking about the assault. Detective Sergeant Vincent reports bleakly to the Brigadier, his superior officer.
We've got absolutely nowhere, sir. Every lead we follow peters into nothing.
I suppose this lad really was assaulted. He didn't make up the whole thing just for the sake of a story in his paper.
If you'd seen him that morning, sir, lying in the gutter with his face all kicked in, you wouldn't have to ask that question, sir. Now, he was beaten up, all right, viciously and cold-bloodedly. They knocked him out in the car and hammered him while he was unconscious. It wasn't very pretty.
But what was the motive for the assault, Sergeant?
A warning, I think, sir. Jessup had written 6 stories about Dacha in Durban. They'd only published the first one so far. I think they beat him up as a warning not to print the rest of the series.
Possibly. But that first story didn't say much. Just a broad outline of the way things are. And heaven knows they're bad enough. You can get Dacha from just about every second rickshaw puller in town, not to mention the waiters.
I read the rest of the series, sir. Young Jessup really got into the heart of the matter. Without actually naming names, he pinpointed the 3 big men behind the gangs, plus a whole lot of smaller fry.
How did he get this information? Well,
by asking the right people the right questions, sir. The kind of people who talk to him, but not to us. And, of course, the papers pay for information like that, sir.
Yes, of course. Did you learn anything from his stories?
No, sir. There wasn't anything there that we didn't know already. I recognize the people he's referring to, of course. We know who these people are. We know to what extent they're involved, but we've practically got to catch them red-handed before we can take them to court. Can't do much without evidence, sir.
Yeah, I know. Same old story. What about this car?
Well, sir, none of the gang members down here drives a car like that, sir. It'd be distinctive enough without the Red Devil mascot, but nobody I've spoken to recognizes it.
So it's an out-of-town car, then?
Most likely, sir. Probably one of the Johannesburg mobs, the Bantu thugs that come down here for easy pickings. They drive back with a bootload of Dacha.
Yes, I know the drill. And unless we catch them right in the act, there's not a blessed thing we can do about it.
The only thing that's bothering me about that theory, sir, is the fact that we generally know when these mobs come down. We keep a watch on them most of the time, but there's no one around Durban at the moment in a car like that.
Well, it's about the best lead you've got, Sergeant. Stick to it. I want these Dacha rings smashed, put out of action, permanently. Even if you locate the car, there seems to be little chance of finding out the truth about the assault on Jessup. Without him being able to identify any of them, we can't get a conviction.
And intensive investigations on the part of the police have met with no success. With other cases piling up daily, the pressure on the assault case becomes less urgent, but the file remains open. In the small charge office of the Isipingo police station, a telephone rings shrilly.
Isipingo police, Sergeant Fenter speaking.
Oh, Sergeant, this is Muriel Walsh. I own the Jabula cash store, the other side of the main road.
Yes, yes, Mrs. Walsh. What's the trouble?
Well, there's been a burglary at my store, Sergeant, and my night watchman has been injured rather seriously, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
The people in the car shot him when he tried to stop them.
But he's still alive, is he?
Oh, yes, and I've already called an ambulance. My own doctor is attending to Jeremiah at the moment, but he says it's essential that he be taken to a hospital without delay.
Yes. Has he told you anything about the robbers?
Yes, yes, he has. According to him, there were 3 Bantu men in a large Johannesburg car. They got away, of course. They simply shot poor Jeremiah and drove away.
Heading in which direction?
Towards Durban. They turned left onto the main road.
I'll put out an alert on the car and its occupants, Mrs. Walsh.
Oh, thank you.
I don't suppose you know the make of the car, do you?
Oh, yes, yes. Jeremiah was most insistent about it. He said it was a blue and white Brentwood sedan.
Sergeant Fenter immediately contacts Flying Squad Headquarters, Stamford Hill. He relates the facts of the report from Mrs. Walsh, and the information is typed out in the form of a radio message. This message is then taken at once to the officer in charge of the radio room. He glances at it and hands it to a constable in the transmitting room.
Here, constable, transmit to all cars immediately.
Right, sir.
Control to all cars. Control to all cars. Be on the lookout for a late model Brentwood sedan. Dark blue and white. Believed to be heading towards the Durban area from Isipingo. Occupants are three Bantu men suspected of taking part in a burglary. These men are armed and dangerous. The car has a Johannesburg registration. I repeat, a late model Brentwood sedan, dark blue and white, with a Johannesburg registration. Intercept and arrest occupants.
11:50 p.m. The late night Saturday traffic is beginning to thin out as the cinema crowds head homewards. Car 27 proceeds south on Moor Road, cruising slowly. At the wheel, Constable Bester glances idly at faces on the right-hand side of the road. Beside him, Detective Sergeant Vincent takes in the human traffic on the left-hand side. Thus far, the evening has been quiet.
No familiar faces this side, sir. You spot anyone your side?
A few, but nobody important. None of the known housebreakers or pickpockets. So, you know, this wouldn't be a good area for them. They want crowds, excitement, bustle. They don't operate in the quiet residential areas.
There's a group hanging around on the next corner, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a bunch of loafers.
All right, slow down as you pass them. They don't know we're in the vicinity. Keeping an eye on them. Might prove discouraging if they are up to some kind of mischief.
They're glancing this way now, sir. They're getting the message, all right.
Good. That's often all it needs, just to know that we're cruising around.
Control to car 27. Coming, 27. Over.
This is 27. Read your control. Over.
The occupants of a blue and white Brentwood sedan held up a petrol station on the South Coast Road and shot the attendant. The car has a Johannesburg registration and has a red devil mascot dangling from the rearview mirror. It is believed to be heading towards Durban along Umbilo Road. The occupants are armed and dangerous. Intercept and arrest. Over.
Message received and understood, control. We are proceeding towards Umbilo Road at once. Over and out.
Blue and white Brentwood, eh, sir? With a red devil mascot.
That's more than just coincidence, Constable. That's the car that was used in the Jessup assault. Come on, move it.
We're getting towards the end of Umbilo now, sir. Another sign of them.
They could have switched one of the side roads, but I doubt it. You know what these thugs are like. Eggers as big as footballs. They like to stick their necks out and flash their cars around.
Even after committing two burglaries in one night, sir?
Especially then. Makes them feel like big-time gangsters. They could, they stick a sign to that effect on the doors of their car.
Hey, hang on, sir.
What is it?
There's a car heading towards us now.
Uh-huh.
Blue and white. And it could be a Brentwood. Cruising nice and slowly. As though they haven't got a care in the world.
All right. Easy now. Let's get a look at them. Two men in front, both Bantu. Looks like another in the back. It's a Brentwood, all right. No mistake about that.
And there's something red dangling behind the windscreen, sir. That'll be the mascot.
Right. Let them get past, then do a U-turn and close in on them. Try not to make too much fuss about it. Maybe we can sneak up before they realize we're under them.
All right, sir. They're going past now, sir.
Okay.
Definitely three occupants, all bound to.
All right. Make your turn now.
They're about 60 yards in front, sir. Two cars in between us. Shall I close in on them?
Yeah, do that.
If we stick behind this second car, we ought to be able to get within 10 or 15 yards of them without them spotting us. Well, let's hope so anyway. I can crowd them and force them off the road if they're not moving too fast.
Blast, they've seen us. The man in the back seat's looking around this way. Close in, now.
Right, sir. Here we go.
Now, they're picking up speed, and that's a powerful car they've got. Give everything you can, Constable.
They're swinging out. Going to do a U-turn.
Well, they're going to make a chase of it, huh?
Here they come.
Get after them. They're doubling back. Ram them.
I can't mount this island, sir. I'll have to turn around.
Hurry it, man.
Here we go.
Yeah, they've increased their lead, and their driver's weaving in and out of the traffic like a maniac.
He doesn't handle the car too well, sir. I think we can close in on him. He's hitting his brake all the time. That'll cost him a few precious seconds.
All right, good work. You've narrowed the gap already. Close another 10 yards, they'll be able to get a shot at them.
Not long now. A minute at the most.
They'll let control know what's happening. Maybe they can bring in other cars in this vicinity. Car 27 to control. 27 to control. Do you read me, control? Over.
Receiving you, 27. Over.
We've intercepted the Brentwood sedan in Umbilo Road. We are in pursuit, heading west on Umbilo. Bring in any other cars in this area, please. Over.
Message received and understood, 27. Over and out.
We're about in range now, sir. Closing fast.
All right, let's see what we can...
They're opening fire on us.
Yeah.
That one came off the right mudguard. Passing in the back seat, leaning out of the window.
All right, let's see how they like a bit of their own medicine. Try to hold her steady, Constable, will you?
Hey, you've hit their back window, sir. It looks like another hole on the right side of the boot.
Well, we'll have to do better than that, won't we? Near misses aren't going to stop them.
You did it.
You hit that tire.
Right. Now for the jackpot prize. This is as far as...
Sergeant, Sergeant! He's been hit. All right, you rats. Now for you. I'm going to ram them off the road. They won't get far with their flat tire. Here we go.
Don't shoot, boss. Don't shoot, boss.
Right, all of you. Out. Your little joyride is over.
Enjoy the 1970 Holdens now.
Holden has big, big changes. Result, the new generation Holdens.
With more power.
More refinement.
New looks.
New wide ride.
So go on, live it up. Enjoy the 1970 Holdens now.
Detective Sergeant Michael Vincent sacrificed his life in the line of duty. But he was instrumental in smashing the drug rings that flourished in Durban at that time. In the boot of the car was found several thousand rands worth of dacha. The arrested Bantu made statements implicating dozens of other men and women. And the police moved swiftly that night in rounding up many of them. At a later trial, one of the Bantu was found guilty of the murder of Detective Sergeant Vincent and sentenced to death. His two companions pleaded guilty to a number of charges of robbery, attempted murder, and trafficking in drugs. They were sentenced to a total of 50 years hard labor.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of squad cars. Listen again next Friday evening to another authentic story in our dramatic South African police series, Squad Cars, brought to you by General Motors, makers of the biggest and most exciting range of cars, trucks, and commercial vehicles in the world. Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Beaumont, Chevrolet, Opel, Holden, Vauxhall, Bedford, GMC, and Ranger, South Africa's own car.